Did it pop up?
Not yet.
Oh, there it is. I see it now.
Okay, so you've got the ball for recording?
Yes.
Okay, great. I wonder why that is sometimes. You can do it, I can do it, I don't know, whatever. Well, good morning, everyone. I hope everyone can see the screen. The two items for discussion. This is a follow-up discussion to last week's central dispatch meeting, where we dove into sort of the after effects of the changes that were pushed out to the consoles on the 20th of January, principally that the E IC zone went away, went off of consoles, and now all of Central is the B, what used to be the old B IC zone. It started a conversation, I think, among just the region about, for what used to be the IC zone, the B IC zone that had been primary monitored, the HALE channel, by MATCOM. And Jacob Butcher actually sent us a note that he was unable to attend this morning, but from the conversation that we had last week, they are happy to continue to do that. However, given the change in just the region and the fact that now Central extends, as Sherry and I were discussing earlier this morning, all the way down the Kodiak for the Central region, it makes sense for all of us to come together and have a discussion and come up with an operational model, if you want to think of it that way, for the monitoring of this new Central Interop HALE channel. And so I think that that's about all I can really speak to with any clear understanding. I keep falling back on the fact that I'm new. I know I won't be able to pull that card all the time, but I know that there are some other folks that are on the call now that could probably at least open up the conversation. I think principally we're still talking about MATCOM being the primary with Soldatna as a backup, but ultimately I think and Jason, this is probably where you were coming from, it makes sense for every regional dispatch that has a console to at least have this up and be have some situational awareness for this HALE channel. Is that the right way to say that, Jason?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I guess I would open it up for any more conversation or questions, et cetera, on that first bullet point, or maybe we're just making too much out of this. I don't know.
Chris, do you want to have that discussion that we had prior to this phone call? I know there's not a whole bunch of people on here, but maybe just throw that out there and get a little bit of feedback from the folks that are on the call.
You're going to have to refresh my memory, Sherry. I'm sorry.
About, although MATCOM is primary and Soldatna is secondary, if, say, a call came in in the Kenai AOR or the Kodiak AOR about those folks requesting to take that as the primary and MATCOM deferring.
Yeah, I think that talks to the comment about how to operationalize this. And, you know, from my vantage point in the OMO, we are certainly not, we're not the ones to figure that out and dictate or subscribe any particular. I think that ultimately, and that's why we wanted to schedule this second session, was for those dispatch centers to have kind of an open floor where they could talk about what makes sense for them. And, you know, if this isn't the right way to do that, maybe there needs to be, I don't know, maybe a more coordinated effort among just the dispatch console owners. I don't know if that makes more sense. I'm looking for any kind of input here, folks, so don't be shy.
So, Chris, this is Scott. I wasn't in the first meeting and just jumped in on this one. But what's the issue that got brought up that this is trying to resolve? I assume it has something to do with the changing of the IC zones.
Yeah, that's right, Scott. So after the changeover, I think it slowly came to the realization that the new central zone expands a massive bit of geography of the state, and does it make sense to expect that MATCOM, as they've expressed an intent to be the primary monitor for the central hail channel, there's going to have to be some coordination and some understanding that, you know, just as Sherry was explaining, you know, if there's something in Kodiak, you know, does it make sense that MATCOM is primary? And having all of the dispatch sort of as secondary for the central zone, just from the sheer perspective of geography, makes sense. And that's why we wanted to have this second meeting, so that we could sort of suss that out and talk about it, so that everyone understood that, you know, now Central, it extends, you know, Kenai, Kodiak, Matsu. It's a big area. So that's ultimately what started driving this, Scott. And we agreed to go ahead and hold a second meeting to sort of summarize and bring this back up and give the dispatch folks, you know, a stage to sort of talk about it. So, you know, mine and Sherry's role was just facilitator.
Right. Yeah. We don't get into, you know, dictating how operationally stuff is used unless it is, you know, education on how the technology works or education on how something that somebody's operationally doing is negatively impacting the system. So I guess my question is, and I wasn't involved in all these conversations, but when the IC zones were all, you know, that process went on for over a year, was it not understood who would be monitoring the different hail channels for the different zones at that point? Wasn't that part of that conversation?
It was, and we actually had it on our FAQ page, and it was in one of the dispatch recordings that we did prior to the switchover. I think that honestly just ran into reality on, you know, the 21st, the day after, when folks realized there was no longer an E, and now they're all expected to be in the central. I think it was just I honestly don't know, where the breakdown was, but it came up pretty swift on Travis and I the following Monday, you know, and Travis and I made several calls to agencies along the Kenai, to make sure that folks were, aware and understood and, you know, listen to their, you know, their complaints or questions or what have you. That's where all of this sort of came out of. And, thinking that we had an obligation to at least bring folks together to facilitate a conversation, that's where we stepped in.
All right. And now I might be asking a stupid question, but I see people from Anchorage on here, but not from, I see invitees from MATCOM and Soldotna, but I don't see them on. So.
Yeah.
Jason and Amy, Amy, are you with Anchorage Dispatch? You're both muted if either of you are talking, but are they on? Because how did this impact them, I guess?
She is.
Okay.
So kind of when everything went away, Scott, because we had the F region, the E region, and the B region, and those all collapsed to the central. So the B talk groups went straight over to central.
At this point.
What's that, Jason? Okay. But so and then the E and the F regions, those talk groups just got deleted out of the system. So I think that's what a lot of the confusion when we did the changeover is those just went away. And there were certain radios out there that only had the I or only had the E programmed in the radios. So it did impact Anchorage, too, because the F went away when we moved it to Central. And that's why they're on.
Okay.
And that's Amy that just dialed in, right?
Yes, it is. Sorry, I'm working from home, and apparently I don't have a speaker on my laptop or a microphone.
Okay.
So from an APD perspective, we've never monitored any of the hail channels or anything. I would really like to have a further conversation with MATCOM and some of the others, but that's not something we've ever done from our dispatch center.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, again, I wasn't involved in the conversations before, so I'm just asking questions as I'm wondering, but this sounds like, you know, whatever the group was that kind of worked out these changes in the IC zones, if it has some operational impacts, that group should be getting together and trying to work through those. And if it means some technical changes need to happen, whether it's, you know, programming radios or changing something on consoles, then we need to be involved in it. But for the moment, this is just sounding like an operational issue that either the people putting this together know the answer to and talked about, or was a surprise to them, and we really need that group of people to be trying to work out how to resolve it, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I just, because this started so long before I came on, it sort of came out of what Travis and I experienced that week after the change. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, we were just trying to get our arms around it more than anything. And I think that that's totally a fair suggestion. I honestly don't know who those folks were, what that committee was. I think Nate was definitely involved in it, but I don't know who the players were from around the, you know, the state. But no, I think that's fair, and it makes more sense for that group to figure this out, and then maybe the OMO could, through its outreach effort, make sure that folks understand what that group is suggesting from an operational perspective. But yeah, no, we were solely just trying to start the conversation here because it sounded like something got missed.
Okay. And Jason, is it impacting you guys? Is that why you guys are on here? Or?
That's more of a dispatch question.
We keep Liz.
The only issue Liz, we had was the patch. The only issue we had, we resolved with the patch.
The only issue you haven't resolved is the patch? Is that what you said?
No, the only issue we had from my end was the lack of interoperability for the R2. But we could fix it with the patch.
Okay. Well, again, Chris, I definitely haven't been involved in this. I'm just trying to ask some questions because, you know, I'm not sure that this is, you know, we're generally, when I say we, meaning the state, my group, and then the two contracts, you know, you guys, OMO and Motorola, generally aren't, you know, telling people how to operationally use it, and we really don't have a whole lot of that type of interaction with the dispatch center. So I think if the fact that they're not here is making me feel like this must not be that big of a deal to them, unless they weren't available for some reason. But and I see Nate did just join us, but
so well, if, it's like a short list there.
Yeah,
Scott, just so you're aware, but the big issue that me and Chris were dealing with, like the week after, that Monday after we did the changeover to the dispatch centers, is we got a few calls where they weren't, for some reason there's a misunderstanding where they didn't think the E regions were just going to go away, and they did, and that's the only radios they had programmed, or the only talk groups they had programmed for the IC channels. So when those went away, they weren't able to communicate on those channels. So we did do a workaround, and this is with Jason too. He had like, I think he said 3,000 radios that he had to reprogram that just only had those other regions in there. So they were completely dead in the water with this change. So we did put a patch in place and brought back a couple of the E talk groups, the EIC channels, and pass those over to the new central, kind of a workaround. And we're letting everybody know, you know, 90 days, and then we're going to give them time to reprogram the radio so it's not impacted on a daily operation. So we gave them 90 days, and then we're going to take those channels out and take that patch down. But that was like the biggest issue that we ran into, and we did do a workaround on that. And then what else came up was MATCOM, since it went from the three regions with, you know, 15 channels each and collapsed to one central with only six talk groups, they brought up a question of what happens if Anchorage and MATCOM have an incident at the same time. How do they, you know, use or designate one talk group for that call or those two different calls? And so that's why we said, let's get a meeting together and kind of talk through some of the things that they have issues with and questions. And that's why Chris kind of put this together. But yeah, I'm not sure why we don't have a bigger turnout for all the dispatch centers. I thought there'd be a lot more people involved today too.
Yeah, and again, we're not going to be able to answer that question. We're not the ones to answer that question. That is between the, you know, the operational users to work that out. If there's some technical thing that has to happen to, you know, address their requirement or a change in something that needs to happen, we'll be involved in that. But how they want to operationally do that, that's, you know, other than advising what's possible technically, that's not our lane to be telling dispatchers how to do their job, so, which we know little about, so. Especially since in Jason's case, Jason has one dispatch center. In Nathan's case, Nathan has DNR dispatch centers. In our bigger case, we have multiple dispatch centers that may have different policies and procedures that we don't really have any say or control over, so how they do things. Yeah. So go ahead, Nathan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry I joined late, guys. I was in the conference with my boss, so it was kind of hard for me to shut her off. But no, in this particular case, we do actually have a little bit of say on what happens and doesn't happen, Scott, just in the fact that these are the statewide IOP zones. They're not day-to-day use stuff. And they're expecting us to kind of make some answers. And that's actually what was in the CONOP before, was that ALMR was telling people how to use these channels to a certain extent. So, you know, that, to that extent, we do have to kind of say something. And I apologize, I didn't hear what else you said, but, you know, it's not just a free for all. They don't just decide, hey, let's just do what we want to do with these channels. We give them some direction based on what ALMR puts out there. So, I hope I didn't misspeak there based on not hearing what the rest of you said, but.
Well, when you say that ALMR puts out there, you're talking about the user council or executive council? Or how the IC zones are meant to be used?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess I'm glad you said that, because again, to make it, it's easy to be me to be saying something that doesn't necessarily translate to the same. I think we're saying the same thing, except Nate's saying it from an operational use. I'm saying it from the system manager point of view. So, you know, the ALMR operational users, which is everybody but me, basically, you know, is the one who is deciding that policy stuff. So I'm just trying to say, you know, I'm not going to tell you guys how to use the IZ zone. The ALMR user community might, but that's the operational community, not us, whether that's dispatchers or somebody else. But it's definitely not the technical system manager people. So I just want to make sure nobody's looking for us to tell them how to do their operational stuff. But yes, the ALMR group might, but that's the operational breadth of it, not the technical side of it. Does that make sense, Nate? I know you and me have talked a lot, so even if I didn't say it right, you probably know what I'm trying to say.
Well, and then the only other thing, you know, what you're saying is I think I understand. If anyone has a question, I'll try to clarify that. And the only other thing, though, I will add to what you're saying is just to also point out the fact that, you know, your group is responsible for the licenses, too. So that's also something else. If they're state licenses, then the buck stops at you. But other than that, that I think everything else, I understand the way you're saying it. So.
All right. Well, then I guess item number one on here, there's the right group of people aren't necessarily here to talk too much about that. Is that the case with that having the other?
Mm-hmm. Scott, I would agree with that assessment. And what I would say is going back to your earlier comment is really digging out who was involved in the original, you know, planning of moving the IC zones to this interop zone plan and asking them to, I don't know, hold meetings, have some conversation and come up with whatever that operational agreement's going to be. And then, you know, we can certainly help, you know, spread the word, but honestly, like you say, I think it's more upon them to state how they operationalize this. Scott, or Nate, is that acceptable, or are you thinking it's something different?
I'm not thinking it differently. I'm just thinking, you know, what's going to happen versus what we would like to happen is two different things. And I think based on what we agreed on last meeting is probably reasonable as far as, you know, MACOM can be primary and then we can just deal with it as it comes with the other areas as far as Central is concerned. But no, I don't disagree with that. It's just, you know, a little bit of guidance is what they're asking for. So we're kind of trying to give them some of that guidance in that respect. If that makes sense, the way I'm saying it.
Well, and who's the people to give them that guidance? I guess that's really what I'm asking.
It's still going to be Krista's group because, again, those thought groups belong to ALMR. They don't belong to an agency. And that's what I'm trying to say is these are interoperable zones. They don't belong to MACOM. They don't belong to the city, they don't belong to me, they belong to ALMR. ALMR has made a situation where these are available for multi-agency use, and so all we're doing is giving that a little bit of guidance to, hey, if we do need to use it, then either the dispatch centers or the incident commanders need to take a hold of that and deal with it. So that's basically the guidance we're giving them, and then letting them deal with it as they come is what you're trying to say. Is that that's not us to tell them how to operate. But still, we're facilitating them having these as an interoperable situation where they don't have to make their own. So, you know, like instead of everybody having everybody else's talk group, which already causes us massive problems, we're making a place where we have a big incident on the highway or whatever, everybody can just come use these, which they technically belong. In this case, they belong to ALMR. No one has to get a talk sharing agreement to do it. And so that's why there has to be guidance to it. And that's the way every state does it. And of course, technically that's the job of the job of the SWIC. I hate all these acronyms. The interoperability coordinator is for him to come up with those things. But we're doing that for him. That's what, you know, right now at the user council is the one that's supposed to be doing those duties because we never have been able to get governance out of that. But in this case, all we're doing is we're saying, okay, because everyone's on ALMR or AWARN, Jason, then we're going to use these talk groups. And then the state facilitated three frequencies and then also the national frequencies, which will be the Simplex channels. And now this is facilitated. Now it's up to the agencies to decide how they're going to use them. Except that we're giving guidance of we want someone to be listening to the call channel and then this is what you have available if you're going to do it that way. So that's kind of I'm trying to agree with you, but also say that they're going to want some guidance from us. We can't just throw it out there and say, hey, go have fun, I guess is what I'm trying to say it very simply.
All right. So there wasn't, so who, is it Northern, Central, Southern? What did we end up calling them?
And North, Central, and Southeast.
Yeah, that's correct.
Who's listening or managing the North and the Southeast?
Fairbanks in the North and Ketchikan in the South.
The two AST dispatches?
That's right.
Fairbanks AST and Ketchikan AST?
Yep. And then Fairbanks City is second for the North region.
All right. Well, and topic two, again, I'll just speak from prior to working at the state experience, that's something that I think we need more and more of happening around the state to just to familiarize new people or people that have been around for a long time and don't know what to do quickly, just from, you know, things I've heard over the years since I've been here. There's a lot of stuff that there's no way you can expect, you know, a trooper in the field to understand how to do because they saw it in a PowerPoint presentation and got trained, you know, at the academy or whatever 10 years ago, that they're going to remember all of that. So any kind of exercise process that can happen periodically, I think, is definitely a good thing. And getting everybody to understand how these interop zones are supposed to work is, and by doing that with an exercise, I think is a real good thing. Otherwise, we end up in a real world situation and nobody's knowing what to do. So big fan of that. I don't know what would drive that or how that would happen, but it would be a good thing to see that happening in my mind. And then I don't know, Chris, if was there other stuff you were needed to talk about in particular with that one?
No, not really. This came out of our last meeting, and Jason, I think Jason beat you, were the ones that really had the sort of idea around this, right? Is to have some kind of recurrent training around the new IC or the new interop.
Right. You know, just like anything else, if you don't familiarize yourself with it and then use it on some sort of frequent basis, the common operating picture fades over time and people aren't used to it anymore. So doing either a quarterly or biannual, something to that extent where all the PSAPs can get together and just do a simulated exercise for, you know, an hour or whatnot, just so that everybody's on the same page.
Yep. So I don't know how we actually transition to making that happen, but it's very definitely a need. Is that, do you have any ideas on that, Scott?
Well, is it based around dispatch centers?
I think it was, yeah, principally the discussion anyway.
And is there any kind of periodic meeting that is happening with all the dispatch centers involved in it? I thought I recall Dell doing something. I don't know if it was a monthly or quarterly meeting.
There's the monthly APCO-NENA conversation that pulls in a lot of the dispatch that I attend. I think that's probably what you're thinking of.
Right.
This is Amy. Those meetings don't actually happen monthly now. They're more like quarterly. And the bigger problem is that not all the dispatch centers are necessarily represented at that. But, I mean, I think we maybe could, we could have some sort of meeting, or I could ask, I think they're trying for a March 2nd APCO NENA meeting is what I thought. I've been on vacation for 10 days, so I'm just playing catch up here. But I could see if we could add it to the agenda for that meeting, if that would be, you know, I do think it's a good idea. I know from an APD perspective, we don't use the interop stuff as much as like the troopers do and other state agencies. But it's not necessarily a bad thing to have everybody familiar with it, of course.
Yeah, I think if it turns out to be something that maybe there needs to be a periodic dispatch-focused group of people getting together to meet to talk about, you know, operational procedures and exercises, that's probably a good thing. But, again, I'm just talking from past experience unrelated to this, so I don't know, you know, if we do something like that at the state already or if we need to do something like that at the state. But I would definitely say it sounds like a good idea. We just need to figure out how to do it, and maybe the OMO can, you know, help facilitate that happening. But Nate, how do you guys train or whatever to get ready for fire season? Do you have tabletop exercises? Do you just have people that know what they're doing because they've been doing it year after year, or do you practice for stuff when it?
No, we have training every year pretty much. I mean, it's never probably, last couple of years has probably been a little bit, well, especially last year, and this year will probably be affected somewhat as well. But no, we do a lot of training, a lot of tabletops, a lot of like that sort of thing that we're talking about. So it's probably a good thing all the way around. And like if based on what Amy said, if they wanted to do it at the APCO, or you know, we could maybe come up with. I was just looking at my calendar to see if March the 2nd might would work for me. Maybe if Chris helps, we could just introduce some discussion of what we were thinking on all that at that particular meeting and then see where that goes from there. And that might be helpful to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is way outside of my area of expertise, but just how would you guys, like, tabletop exercise a fire in the Anchorage Hillside? You know, is that something that gets talked about or practiced, or is that just natural? Everybody would know.
No, we actually make them, and that's one of the things that, you know, when we're doing as best we can. Like I said, the last couple of years we've been kind of slack on it because of obvious reasons. But normally we do our training. In fact, some of the Anchorage Fire Department folks have been there a few times. We actually use sand tables and everything else to create in fact, one of our scenarios is Anchorage Hillside that we use for the harder, the more experienced incident commanders. We throw that problem at them. And so we actually will get them all in there. We make them use their radios. We make them make a comm plan. We make them, you know, give their size ups to dispatch. And we have dispatchers sitting in the dispatch office, and they dispatch the fire as if they would normally. And then we, you know, people like me will play, like we'll play the fire chief from Anchorage or whatever, and we'll add that complexity to it. We do a full blown sand table exercises and all that kind of stuff when we really get to doing it. And then we try to encourage all, like, so after we do that for the first start of the fire season, we try to encourage all the areas that they're not busy. Of course, they can get real busy, and then they're getting their own everyday training with that. But we encourage them to do it internally, and a lot of them do. Most of them do. Most of them will just set up their own little individual training. And in fact, this year we're going to have to kind of work on that a little bit more than we have in the past because, you know, we, as some of you know, we're consolidating some of our dispatch centers. So instead of every place having a dispatch center, we're just going to have Fairbanks is going to cover Delta and Tok, and we've traditionally not done that. So we're working on tabletop exercises for that right now. So yeah, we do try to do that as much as we can. I guess I'm always hesitant to say much because, you know, I would say we're doing it perfectly, but we're doing the best we can with that.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that you guys kind of start and stop with fire season, I think kind of gives you a natural cadence to be, you know, starting back up, getting everybody ready, talking through this stuff, whereas everybody else, if they're, you know, they're doing day-to-day operations every day of the year, so it's kind of hard to have like a spin up and a demob time. But so I think it's good to, you know, to try to figure out how to force these types of tabletops or exercises or even just, you know, periodic meetings where the different involved people can be talking and sharing ideas and identifying issues that can try to work through as a group. So yeah, I mean, if there's a way maybe to set up if the dispatch agencies, you know, does it go beyond just, you know, the ones that are full blown connected to LMR? I mean, what about Homer? What about Seward? Places that are maybe RF connected, Kenai, do they all play into this somehow too? Or is it really the focus of what this should be is just talking about how the IC zones are intended to be used in practice and how that would happen in a big event?
Well, in my mind, I think we're just trying to focus on, again, back to that, what the OMO has responsibility for, focusing on what the interop zones are for. But, you know, again, I can see all kinds of thinking that way, but you got to start somewhere because it's a pretty big elephant to eat. So, but it does, you know, basically it does include all the dispatch centers. So basically at some point they all kind of need to be involved. But I think the two big things, and we established that last meeting just to clarify, is that someone's listening. There's someone to call on that call channel. And then two, that if they are asking for doling out of the talk groups, especially, then the dispatch center would be responsible and make sure that it's happening. And that's about the two big things. And then the third piece would be that it's really back on the agencies to, or back on how they dole out their incident command staff to decide how they might use those locally. I mean, I can tell you how they should be, but, you know, again, that's more of a, they need to be doing that. So it's kind of, and that's the idea. You know, the idea would be if, instead of thinking, I mean, so many of the busies that we keep talking about are all caused by the fact that they'll get on scene and use a talk group instead of using, they can all look at each other, but they're not using the simplex channel. So the idea was if we could all get them to go over to, say, Central, and they're on Turnagain Pass, well, one thing, they're going to have better coverage on their handhelds with simplex to talk to each other. And for two, you know, instead of making busies the way we were doing before on three-channel sites, now they're actually doing operations locally. So that's kind of the trying to steer that going that way. And then for bigger incidents, it also makes it easier to transition. If we had a big, huge incident where, you know, all the responders are using talk group to get to the incident, but then now we have to functionally dole it out, and now they have the simplex channels to do that just on the same zone that they would have had to change zones to get to that. So that was the idea.
All right.
Well, so how about at the next APCO NENA, I can reach out to Meyer and get on the agenda, and Nate, you and I can go offline and sort of talk that through a little bit more here around bullet point number two. And then I guess to come back to bullet point number one, we really need to find out who was in that working group, Nate, and maybe start that conversation up around this, this point and, you know, how the central is going to be monitored going forward. Does that okay. sound? I mean, I'm open for any other suggestions, but at this point, and you know, just from the fact that we don't really have all the folks on the phone that needed to be involved in that conversation, that might be how it has to go forward. Amy, were you about to say something?
No, I'm good. I mean, I think that sounds like a good idea. I mean, I think I'm the only PSAP representative on this call, if I'm looking at this right. So we definitely need to have, you know, MATCOM involved and, you know, whoever else would, you know, Soldotna or whoever, for the central part anyway. I mean, obviously North and Southeast doesn't affect us as much, but I think that's a good idea to maybe just have a separate meeting with the PSAPs to try to figure out the monitoring part of it.
Okay. Okay. Any other thoughts on either one of these two bullets?
Okay. Nothing from Jason.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Scott, were you going to say something?
No.
Okay.
Sherry's got okay. her hand raised.
I have seen that, and I wondered, did you mean to raise your hand, Sherry?
No, it doesn't show it's raised on my hand, so I don't know what's going on.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for attending this morning. And I think, if anything else, I've got a little bit better direction on how to go forward. Nate, I'll look at your I'll look at my calendar and send you some availability, and we can go forward.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Thanks.